Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Artists Helping Artists. We are the number one art show on Blog Talk Radio. This is Leslie Seda in South Pasadena. I am your host today, and I have my marvelous co-host, Carrie Waller, on the line. Good morning, Carrie. How are you?
Good morning. I am great. I'm in a very pretty day in right outside Little Rock, Arkansas today.
How is Arkansas? Because you've only been there now a couple months, right?
Yeah, we moved here this summer, and it's really pretty here. I wasn't expecting that. I don't know why, but even the local people here, they always see, people just think it's, you know, Arkansas, the middle of, you know, nowhere or something, but it's really pretty here. So I really enjoyed it. I didn't expect all the hills, and, you know, you have your four seasons again. I've lived in the South now for, goodness, 3 or 4 years, so, yeah, we're enjoying it.
Well, it's a beautiful place. I was there when I was a child. My father's actually from Arkansas, which is kind of funny. So I haven't been there in a really long time. But today we have a great show. It's called How to Give a Great Painting Demo. And I want to thank Trish Lyons for emailing me actually like this week or last week with the idea. But Carrie and I both love the topic, so we're really excited to talk about it. But first, I did want to talk a little bit about what happened to the show last week. First, I wanted to apologize for canceling it so quickly and let everybody know that Sherry McGraw, who's an amazing artist, is actually going to be on the show next week on Thursday, which I'm very excited about. But the reason why I canceled the show is actually I was in the hospital. And normally I don't share these kinds of things publicly, but I'm going to share it because if I can help anyone out there listening, I want to do that. And let you all know that, of course, I'm totally fine, and I'm doing great. And I have to ask one favor, and that is please do not write all over Facebook, oh, I'm so glad you're okay, et cetera, because I don't want to freak my children out any more than they already were, which I know sounds funny. But I'll take a very long story and make it relatively short and just let you know that last Wednesday morning, I was talking on the phone in my office and suddenly experienced dizziness, tingling in my arms, and my speech wasn't functioning correctly. And I literally, the minute it happened, hung up the phone, ran upstairs, took 2 aspirin, came downstairs, and within about a minute, I felt much better, which was a good thing. And I grabbed my purse and got in my car and drove toward the hospital. Of course, now we know that that's not really the right thing to do. You should probably call an ambulance if that happens, but I just wanted to get some attention, so I actually got my doctor on the phone and ended up going straight to my doctor's office where they did an EKG, and they said everything looked okay with my heart, but they wanted to admit me to the hospital for testing. So I was there for 2 days, did millions of tests. The good news is so many things in my body are in great shape, which I know sounds funny, but it's always nice to know that everything is functioning so well. But they did brain scans and echocardiograms and stress tests and everything else. But what happened was the very last test they did, they found a something that's called a PFO, and it's a little tiny hole in my heart, something that I was born with. And unfortunately, they think that caused a mini stroke. And it's the kind of stroke, if you're going to have one, the kind you want to have. It's called a TIA. It's a very minor stroke. There's no permanent damage. And the neurologist says that's what she is saying I experienced, even though there was no proof on any of the MRIs or MRAs that I had a stroke. She was 90% convinced that that's what happened. So this isn't becoming a short story. It's actually going on way too long. But I just wanted to say that I'm on blood thinners and everything's going to be great. So the reason why I'm bringing this up is this is pretty common, and it happens to a lot of people. And there's the acronym FAST, F-A-S-T. And basically, it, the F stands for facial. And if you or anyone you're with experiences any kind of facial disorientation, and then A, if you can't raise your arms, or if you try to raise your arms and one of your arms isn't working properly, S stands for speech, and that is if your speech is impaired or you have any problems, and that was the first sign that I knew that something was wrong. And then T means it's time to call an ambulance or dial 911. So it's just something that I want everybody to be aware of because it's something that is really common. And if you get attention and this happens immediately, they can give you some medicine that can almost prevent you from having anything disabling for a long time. So don't worry about me. I'm totally fine. I am just great, but because I was in the hospital, I couldn't do the show. That's the only reason why I would cancel it, I swear.
I'm surprised you didn't do it from the hospital, because I watched you Facebooking from the hospital.
I know, shame on me. And then, of course, we are doing, so that's enough about that, but like I said, please don't make a big deal. I am totally fine, and my children all know what happened. I didn't tell them till after the fact. When I got my husband to agree to that, because I wanted to make sure I knew, because I really honestly thought that after every test was coming back negative that I was going to be just fine. So I am fine. And today's show is actually early because I'm going to be on a plane on Thursday heading to Charlotte, North Carolina to teach another workshop this week, which I'm very excited about. So it's going to be very fun.
You're in the middle of one right now, correct?
I am. I'm teaching a 3-day workshop here in my carriage house in South Pasadena. I have 8 awesome students, and I'm so excited. My dear friend Dreema Tolperry and I were at Dick Blick during the workshop we taught in September, and they had these easels on sale. And she said, you know, Leslie, it would be really smart if you had these in your studio because the footprint on the easel is so small. They're beautiful upright wooden easels, but they're not the kind that have that leg that sticks out about 6 feet in front.
Right.
And I bought 8 of these easels, and thank heavens my father-in-law put them together for me. But they're in my studio, and it's just been wonderful because now my students don't have to bring an easel, which I love to make it easier on them. So anyway, I'm teaching here, and then I teach Friday, Saturday, Sunday in Charlotte, and then I do have a workshop through the Deborah Hughes Gallery in early November, and I think there might be 2 spots left in that. So it's going to be a busy teaching year, and it's probably what I love to do almost as much as painting, and I'm really enjoying it. So very, very fun. But maybe
the
we should get
coming out of your workshop are gorgeous. I was your pictures yesterday, and I drool every time I see your carriage house. But you know, the paintings your students are doing are just fabulous. So you're doing lots of good things.
No, it's really fun, and it's just for me incredibly invigorating when you get other artists in my studio. I hate painting alone, so I just need to put a sign on my front lawn that says, "Come on in and paint with me." And I'd be much happier. But tonight I'm cooking a gourmet dinner for them. So I'm going to make, I've got crab cakes and smoked salmon and grilled chicken and maple soy sauce, and it'll be fun. So I'm excited.
Lucky students.
Yeah, well, we'll have a fun time. But let's go ahead and start talking about our show now that I've let some time elapse. I love this topic of how to give a great painting demo. And the reason is because whether you realize it or not, painting demos can really help your art career. And obviously, they are great visibility for you and your art. They're a terrific way to show people in a different way what you're doing. And we're going to talk about 2 different kinds of demos today. One is one that you do in front of an audience live, and the other are painting demos on like videos, because Karen and I have both done both, and I think they're a really important part for your career. And really, when it comes to painting demos, they're really almost the same as teaching a workshop. So if you enjoy giving demos and you're getting positive feedback, it probably means you should also consider teaching, which is kind of a nice entree into the teaching world.
Yes, and also there, you can earn money from them. Many art clubs have a budget for the demos, and they'll pay the artists for their time, and they can vary, but often average between $100 to $300.
Mm-hmm.
And they may ask you for the completed painting to use as a raffle or a way to get for the club auction to make money. But you can always negotiate that, you know, maybe do a print instead, or, you know, work with them on that.
In fact, I gave a demo to an art group this summer. And, you know, it's just a great way to get visibility because it's an area in Los Angeles I used to live, but I don't ever get out there because it's like, you know, everything in Los Angeles is an hour away.
Right.
And so I had barely finished giving the demo, and the woman who runs the classes grabbed me before I left and signed me up to teach a workshop, and I'm actually teaching it in Palos Verdes in December. So you never know where it can lead. And so, I'm, you know, my philosophy is you've got to try a lot of different things out there and stick them up and see what kind of follows through and what works to help your career. And demos are a great option. So there's a lot of different places where you can give a demo. And you kind of got to do a little homework and be aggressive in marketing yourself to do demos.
Right, and I mean it's great marketing because it's your time, which mm-hmm. is valuable, but it's not costing you a lot. But and a lot of local art groups are looking for artists to give demos, and you can look online for a list of your local art clubs. You can email them samples of your art, and, you know, ask if they're interested in doing any, you know, demos or having that on their schedule.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Carrie, when you mentioned about some of the art clubs would like to see if you would give them the painting when you're done, mm-hmm. I don't do that just because for me to give away a 12 by 12 or a 11 by 14 painting, that's a pretty expensive investment for me. And don't feel like you have to do that because you don't. And I know you mentioned, but I just wanted to reiterate the fact that don't think every time you do a demo, you have to actually give the painting away. Because
I've never been asked to do that, but I'm sure, you know, I haven't done a ton of demos yet, so I'm sure that might pop up in the future.
Yeah.
So that was good to hear. At least you're prepared, you know, if that does
mm-hmm.
happen for an answer.
Definitely. So I just want to let that. So another thing is, and I've talked about this on the show before, but if you're participating in an art fair or a show or you're doing, you know, something where you're out, and there's a lot of people, perhaps a lot of artists, you should always do a demo. And I can tell you, I've done this show every year. The first year I did not do a demo, and the show was like, okay, not great. The last 3 years I've done a demo, and the show's been amazing. And I think what happens if you do a demo, it just creates more interest and builds excitement around your space, and it gives people a reason to stop and look. And it's just something that you can do. And I always look at it this way. Wow, I did an art show. I sold art, and I painted a painting too.
Yeah. So, you know, think about it. And some people don't even know, you know, they may not know if you're the artist. They may not know if you've painted mm-hmm. those or if they're prints. Or, you know, I've been to several shows where they just have, you know, kind of like the art that comes from China or wherever, you know, where they got the people. So they don't know where it's coming from. So that, you know, gives them, you know, oh, that's the artist, you know, and they've met you then. And, you know, yeah, I think it just opens up great conversation.
Yeah, I kind of look at it as if, you know, I'm not shy. I don't mind when people walk by asking them a question or engaging them. But for a lot of artists, it's hard to do. And if you can, and I'm not saying hide behind your easel, but if you can talk about what you're doing, what you're painting, it's just a lot more interesting. And it's going to really help you, I think, in engaging with your audience. So just a recommendation.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you shouldn't limit yourself to just art groups. You should think outside the box and, you know, think about what other venues, you know, could you do a demo at? And, you know, everyone's interested, I think, in seeing somebody paint and showing their talent. So, you know, think outside of the box. Maybe there's a farmer's market or a floral market or, you know, something that maybe ties in with your art.
Mm-hmm. Because if you... For example, I paint boats, right? And I had a yacht club group ask me if I wanted to come out and do a demo for them. They're not an art group, but it was amazing. I had so many people afterwards ask me if I could paint their boats, paint paintings of their boats, I should say. And it was really exciting. So, you know, if you paint a lot of florals, contact a local garden club. And perhaps they would want you to at one of their meetings. And the advantage of painting for a non-art group is there's a very good chance. I mean, a lot of artists may not buy your work because they have their own. And right. Now, I'm not saying artists aren't great collectors because they are, but a non-art group, you've got a whole group of people there who perhaps haven't had exposure to art and may be very, very interested in purchasing one of your pieces. So I think it's just a win-win. I really do.
Yeah, so. And I was just, you know, off the top of my head, I was thinking, there's a lot of people out there that paint horses or dogs, and there's
mm-hmm.
horse shows, dog shows. You've got people that paint old cars, different cars, there's all kinds of car shows. So just, you know, really think about it and where these people that are spending money on this hobby might want to, you know, extend that into something you're already painting.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And even if it's not an organization, even if it's a location where you could go and paint, you know, let's say it's a really, really popular restaurant and they have an outdoor patio area and they want, and you could go and you could paint something there. I mean, there's just a lot of ways to set up a different location to do your painting where you can get a ton of exposure. So
I would bet plein air painters get approached a lot about that. I mean, I know when I was traveling through Europe, you had the street painters and you know, selling. So I'm sure, you know, if you're a plein air painter, you might have people approaching you anyway.
Definitely. No, I couldn't agree with you more. So
when you're doing a demo, it is really important that the audience gets to know you. When the audience likes the instructor, the demo is always more successful, and so you need to tell them about yourself. Every instructor should start with information like how you started your career and the reason you paint and the inspiration and motivation, you know, behind why you're painting. I think, you know, I think most people like to know the artist of painting, you know, a piece, and your biggest collectors when you're starting out are normally friends and family and people that know you, and then extends to your local area, you know, generally, and then, you know, I think that's one of the battles online. You have to try to break down that barrier and get to, you know, people to know you online through, you know, video demos or just when you're selling your art. So I think it's really important that you, you know, people get to know you.
Mm-hmm. It is so, so true. And we all know people like to buy art from people that they know or that they think they know.
Right.
Those are two really important points. So the more you you know, just kind of let down the barriers and talk about yourself and why you love your art, I think the better chance you have of building some new fans. So the other thing you have to understand about when you're doing a demo is that creating a painting while explaining what you're doing and why you're doing it is not necessarily a simple task. It is a little harder than it may seem. And you just have to understand and be prepared. And we're going to talk about getting prepared and how you can get started. But if you haven't done a demo before, it's not like going into your studio, playing the music, and just painting a great painting. It's a very different experience. And not that hard, if you practice. So.
Yeah, and I was at a demo once where the artist had a very hard time verbalizing. And not only that, but couldn't speak while they painted. So, you know, it's really something I think you need to work on. And, you know, if you get if you can't be distracted while you're painting, you know, you need to maybe paint something that you're really familiar with so you can talk about it, or, you know, do a painting you've already done before so that you can talk about it. But you really need to understand, you know, that you're creating a painting and you're explaining it to the others and you know, work on that. But and the best demo instructors will explain every time their brush touches the canvas so that you speak while you're painting. And I think that that is a great, you know, something you could be practicing at home, you know, to learn it before you do a demo.
Yeah, and you have to, even though you are talking the whole time you're painting, you do have to understand that making changes in painting how you feel is part of the process. So sometimes it's hard to explain what you're doing, and that's okay. You don't feel – so what happens if you're doing a demo and the painting starts to go south, for example? I mean, that's, I think, everyone's nightmare, right? Well, you have to do exactly what you would do in your studio. Scrape part of it, reconfigure, and if that's what happens, that's fine. Include that as part of your demo. I mean, you don't have to say, I did this on purpose to show you what to do when it happens, but it's important to be able to say, okay, here, you know, and just say, you know, I'm not happy with this, so I'm going to, as I would do in my studio, I'm going to scrape this off and rework it, and I'm going to show you how I do that. So you have to kind of work through it. The other thing is, when you're painting, sometimes you do things and you don't really know why you do them. It's just instinct. And it's okay to say that too. And sometimes people will go, wow, that's amazing. Why'd you do that? And you can say, you know, I'm not really sure. It's just a lot of years of painting and practice, and I had a sense that it was something I needed to do. So I guess my point is, don't get too caught up in the having to explain every single stroke that you paint. I know when I'm teaching, there are times when I need to kind of move along the demo, and I will tell my students, you know, I'm not going to talk as much. I'm just going to paint, and I want you guys to watch what I'm doing. Because I've talked so much, they're probably tired of hearing me talk, but... it's kind of figuring out how to go with the flow and understanding that all you're doing is creating a painting just like you would in your studio or just like you would when you're painting plein air, You just happen to have a bunch of people watching you.
Right. And I think people can get hung up on that. And I'm a very nervous person, especially when you're just starting out. Mm-hmm. And you've never done one before. So I think, you know, the way I combat that is you just practice and practice and practice a lot. So maybe do that same painting like 10 times. So you could almost do it in your sleep. Or if you paint a certain subject a lot, make sure, you know, do that painting so that it's not, you're not trying to figure out, oh, what color, you know, I'm doing a new color palette today or something. You know,
right.
Doing something you're so familiar with, because you really need to have that, you know, don't be nervous about that part of it. You know, that take
well,
that
when
out
you're-
of-
No, you're right, because when you're getting started, you have to make sure the most important thing is you have to have a process in how you create a painting. And so from start to finish, how do you create it? And you need to be able to kind of, as you said, practice this in advance. And it's really important to know, okay, so for example, do you paint dark to lights? Do you block in shapes? What are the process? And you may not realize it, but you probably paint the same pretty much every time you go to your easel. And there is a plan of attack, and you just need to be able to verbalize how you're doing it. So it's really important to understand the process of how you create a painting. And I think doing demos and going through kind of this practice will only help you become a better painter.
I totally agree because, I want to tell you, I did not even realize how I painted until I joined a group one time online, and they like to see a lot of the work in progress pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started doing work in progress pictures at that point in time because I'm like, oh, that's good to know, you know, have people like to always like to see that. When I started doing those and started taking a picture of my whole process, I was like, I had no idea I painted from right to left. I had no clue.
Mm-hmm.
So I think even doing something like that could really help prepare you, kind of document your process or film yourself while you're doing it and then watch, you know, yourself and then say, oh, I didn't realize I did that because, you know, and if you can do that and be speaking about it at the same time, you know, talk out loud while you're painting, like, why did I add that color? You know, why have I changed this? You'll start to begin, you know, how unique your process really is.
Mm-hmm. No, that's really important. Yeah, I mean, kind of sounds funny to be in your studio talking out loud, but you need to be able to do it.
I still have little people at home, so I'm always talking to somebody. That's my big fear. I'm going to be in the grocery store someday just talking to myself. I'm so used to always having somebody around.
No, I know that feeling. I have my tall people aren't around anymore. I know you have little people, but my tall people aren't around anymore, but I still talk to myself. one of the basic things when you're getting started and you're practicing demos is you really need to make sure you put a list together of everything you need to complete your painting, all of your supplies, and while you're painting in your studio. If you're going to go into your studio and paint a painting, from the very start, put together this list, save it in your computer, make sure you have it, because nothing is worse than showing up for a demo without your brushes or showing up for a demo without white paint. So it's really important to kind of be organized and be practiced. It's just kind of like doing, you know, painting plein air. We all have our plein air kind of kits of all the supplies that we know we need. And we've all gotten out there and forgotten something really, really important. So another thing you might want to do is do a practice run with your friends or your art friends. You know, invite them over and do a demo for them. You'll have a better idea of maybe what you've forgotten, what needs to be explained more thoroughly, and they'll probably tell you. If they're really good friends, they'll help you out.
Yeah, I think that would be fabulous because I think that would take a lot of the edge off, you know, especially if it's the first time you're going out to do one that you've already done it. You've had a dry run.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
But if you can check out the space ahead of time, I think that is really great, too, because then you'll have all your details nailed down, you know, how long you're going to be demoing. You need to ask, you know, ahead of time. For me, since I paint with watercolor, I need access to water and I need tables. So I think, you know, it's important. People don't realize how much space you might need.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you need to make sure, oh, that's not going to work. Or, you know, you don't want to show up 2 minutes before you're supposed to be doing this thing and realize, you know, we're going to drag some tables from somewhere. You know, you need more than 2 feet of space to paint. Also, you know, are there restroom facilities around? And if you're going to be doing a long demo, did you bring any, you know, drinks or snacks? And how long is it going to take you to get to the place, and how long does it take you to set up? So factor all those things in. And, you know, not only that, but if you're going to be at the back of the building, do you have some kind of, you know, way to get all of your supplies there quickly? You know, do they have a cart that you can use? Those kind of things.
Really, really good points. Because, the unknown is probably what makes us all nervous. And if you can get rid of some of those unknown factors, you can be a lot more relaxed when you do it. The other thing you could consider is writing an outline. And so you just have a, you know, even a little one-page outline of what you want to say, topics you want to hit, techniques you want to show. And if you just have that down on the table and you can just glance at it periodically, I think it's important because it's kind of like a little bit of a crutch and something that if you want to make sure you didn't forget anything. But fortunately, so much of it is visual, and just painting is really what people want to see. So.
Right, but also if you're having trouble verbalizing, if you have that, like, have your little punch list of, okay, did I mention those? You know, you have some conversation starters. You also should try to anticipate questions that might come up during the demo. This might be a good thing to have your friends, you know, do if you're doing a friend, your friends come over. You might want to make two or three of them, like, you be my worst case scenario, you know, and have them hit you with the bad questions. But, you know, if you don't know the answer, don't be afraid to admit that. I think there's nothing worse than somebody trying to fake an answer. So I wouldn't try to sound, you know, all-knowing. I would just be honest about it.
I agree.
And I've seen, there's a funny shirt going around. I've seen an image on Facebook. It's mostly plein air painters, but they have a shirt on for a crowd. It says, thank you for admiring my painting. I'm sure Aunt Trudy was a great artist also. I can hear you whispering. And I can't draw a straight line either, or please grab a card and visit my website. But those, you know, that's kind of a conversation starter too, because I think we've all been asked that or told a story about their family member. You know, people want to talk about, you know, how they can relate to you. So.
Another really important thing you have to kind of incorporate into your practice with your demo, and that is don't let questions stall your demo. So let's say you start your painting and you get all these questions. You can't, based on the timing, and you probably have a limited amount of time to finish this painting, you can't really stop and answer 20 minutes worth of questions. You have to multitask. You have to paint and answer their questions at the same time. One of the things you can obviously do is say, you know what, I'm going to move on this painting, so let's wait and we'll answer these questions at the end. Because the last thing you want to do is, even if you've practiced and you're convinced you can finish this painting in 2 hours, is have the time limit hit and you're only halfway done with your painting because you spent a lot of time answering people's questions. So, you know, if you're comfortable painting and answering their questions at the same time, great, but don't hesitate to push them more toward the end just so you can get through with your demo.
Yeah, it's kind of a balancing act. I think you just need to do both. It'll be a cake. Also, when I did a demo at the Montgomery Museum of Fine Art. And
okay, I like this. Is a really funny story.
I know, but it's true because you've got to think about all these things, and you need to be cognizant of what you're wearing. I paint on tables, so you're going to be looking down on me. So this night I happened to wear a lower cut blouse, and I didn't even think about it until I was there. And so you had a great view of my cleavage that evening. So I attracted a large male crowd, and I had a few fans that were there for a long time.
But it's more important, Carrie, did you sell your painting? No, I'm kidding.
It was pretty. You know, makes you really self-conscious. How do I, you know, make up for this right now?
That would be really distracting if you suddenly realized what was happening while you were trying to paint a demo.
Yes, and you're stuck there. So, and this was kind of a formal evening, so I didn't think about it. You know, I didn't really think about it, so think about it.
Well, and you want to make sure you're comfortable, too. You got to have comfortable shoes. You need to make sure you've thought about those things, and you've brought a water, and you've maybe even brought a snack that you may want to enjoy right before you start your demo. So another thing is you have to be aware of the difficult questions, because every once in a while you're going to get somebody out there who maybe doesn't have that natural buffer to understand on how you can make someone feel uncomfortable based on the questions that you ask them. And so you have to be prepared. Don't let it freak you out. But, you know, you may get the, you know, why are you painting this? Or the, don't you think the painting would look better if you did this? And you sometimes you just have to, you know, be funny in your answers. But a lot of times people will say, well, hey, you know that thing is crooked in the back. And, of course, you've known it, but it's just you've been blocking in shapes and it's not anything close to where you're going to finish the end of the painting. But, you know, or why are all those dark things on your painting? And sometimes you just have to be very polite and explain. But understand that occasionally you may get a odd question and one that's not that nice.
Always one in the bunch.
Yeah, sometimes, and it's really certainly not that common, but it can happen. And just my point is don't let it fluster you and just make sure that you're, you know, have some fun with it and enjoy and keep control of your own demo, I guess, which is very important.
Yeah. And also you should, we talked about this already, but practice your demos so you know how long it's going to take you. Because if you have, you know, 2 hours and you're doing something that's going to take you 3 hours, which sounds funny to me because nothing takes me 3 hours.
I know.
Everything
I know.
Takes me 20 hours more.
How do you do a demo? I'm just going to ask you this, Carrie, when it takes you so much longer, do you do a portion of a painting or how do you do it?
Yeah, I was going to get into that. I think for me, having different stages is great, especially mm-hmm. in my workshops, my demos, because there is no way I can complete a painting.
Oh,
and
no
I have
way.
Been to, I have, no, there's, I have been to a workshop, an actual full-blown workshop, where the artist wouldn't even attempt to paint. You know, he barely did any painting, which mm-hmm. is kind of crucial in a workshop. But, you know, you have to figure out a way to get past that. So for me in watercolor, you can do it in stages. That, you know, it takes some prep time. It takes some, you know, ahead of time work, but you can have different stages of your painting. And then I ask, you know, what people want to see. A lot of people want to see how I paint glass. So mm-hmm. I will stick on that area. You know, you don't need to watch me paint, you know, flowers for 20, you know, for 2 hours when you might really want to see how I'm painting glass. So
right.
I try to do a little bit of both and then have a completed painting of that painting with me so they can see where I'm going.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that's important to know, just because we know where we're going, not everybody knows where we're going or how we get there. So I think you really need to, you know, have that there so they can say, oh, you're going to do that from that, you know. And I've had weird questions like, do you have paint, glass paint? Do you have metal paint? No. I don't.
Oh, that's such a funny question, but that makes so much sense for somebody who's not an artist.
Right.
Yeah, you use different paint to paint different things.
Yeah, we're so into this that we think everybody must know a little bit about it. People
mm-hmm.
don't necessarily know about it. But what I was going to say for the phases, like even for oil painters, you on the same canvas could have phases. You could have a third of it be your underpainting, a third of it be your technique and style, and then the last third be, you know, more of a completed painting. So right there on one canvas, you could show all of the stages. I just went to a workshop or a demo last week with Jane Angelhart, and she's a watercolor, and she does portraits in watercolor. And she had about 10 different, of the same portrait, 10 different phases.
Mm-hmm.
And she had like two or three of these floating around, and you could actually pass them around and flip through them. And she had it, you know, through 1 through 10 stage, just like you'd see in a book when you see this, you know, drawing down all the way to the completed painting.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was really great because
did she actually paint in the demo too?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And
okay.
She painted one of the portraits that she had the 10 stages of. So then you could also see her painting, you know, that. And, you know, she answered some of the questions that people had from those 10 different steps. Well, how did you do this right here? You know, people were worried about the eyes looking a little blurry because she would do washes over the eyes,
mm-hmm.
Things like that. So she was able to then, you know, they could actually say, look, on this stage 5 here, how did you get from here to here? And she could show you, you know, that part. So I thought that was really great. But like, it does take some ahead of time prep, you know, to get it to that phase.
Yeah, because I've seen oil painting demos where the artist would start from scratch and paint for maybe 20 minutes and then stop and pull out
right.
kind of a painting that went from there to the next step. And they'd show. Then she'd pull out another canvas that was at that point and she'd continue on and she'd paint for 20 minutes and she'd pull out another canvas and show, okay, this is where how I went from there to there. So basically she was skipping steps in her demo.
Mm-hmm.
And she was skipping steps by pulling out, I mean, this does take a heck of a lot of work.
It does.
But so she would show you an in-between canvas of some progress that she'd made. Then she'd pull out another canvas that was at that point and paint on it. So, I mean, you could do that. You just, as you said, you have to practice and you have to make sure you feel confident that you can get it done. I've gotten really lucky in the demos that I've done, and I don't know how. I always have a clock right there in front of me, and so I kind of have a sense that I know kind of where I need to be at a certain point in time, so I need to know if I need to shut up and paint faster. And I may say, okay, we're getting behind, so I'm just going to paint for the next 5 minutes, and I'm not going to talk.
Right.
So if you have questions, that's okay, but I need to paint while I'm talking. So.
But I think it's important because somebody like me, that paint takes, there's no way I could do a painting in a short amount of time. So I think it's important that artists that do paint like that know that they can still do demos. There is a way around it. It's just going to be a little more work.
Right. And you can also do a demo on how to paint eyes on a portrait. You know, I mean, it can be on a portion of a painting. It doesn't have to be on the whole thing. I could do a demo on how to paint reflections.
Right, and you know, that Ona Kingdom, she does these really whimsical kind of watercolors. And she was doing a demo, and she's the same way. There's no way she can do that. She came up with a composition where she could do that. And she made it, it was like a puzzle, like puzzle pieces. And so she just painted the eyes of the puzzle, and the rest of it was a blank kind of puzzle, you know, like you were filling in the puzzle. So she came up with a creative way to have a completed painting in the end without a lot of painting.
Right, right. The other thing you want to think about is understand that you don't have to be perfect, and you also want to make sure you're having fun. So if you hit a rough spot, I mentioned earlier, tell the audience, but ask for their input. Like sometimes what I'll say, and when the audience feels like they're having a say in what you're painting, you've got them. You've hooked them in. So
right.
I'll say, here's my inspirational photo, but what color do you guys want this boat on the left to be? And 99% of the time they'll say the exact same color of the picture that I've taken. But they may say red, and I'll go, okay, well, I'm going to paint it red. And suddenly they feel like, oh, wow, I just had some input on this demo. How cool is that?
Right.
And you've kind of grabbed them in. So anytime you can involve your audience like that, it's good. And don't forget that it's okay to be human. So it's a really wonderful experience, and I don't know. I think they're going to laugh, but some of my best paintings I've ever done have been demos or teaching, and it's kind of retarded to think that, but I think I need to pretend I'm doing a demo and I'm in my studio, and I'll be much happier with the end result.
You're in your element with all the people.
How
the energy.
Is that? Very strange.
Yeah, I think that is a great point you said about having them, because not only that, you might sell that demo to that person.
Well, that's the point I'm getting to. By asking them for their input and changing up something based on what the audience said, you pull them in, and somebody may want to buy that painting because they're going to feel like you painted it for them.
Right. I had a guy put my name on a building one time, you know, like an Italian building. It's hard to want to turn that down.
Yeah.
Name.
Oh, absolutely.
And I used to paint murals before I was doing watercolor professionally, and I did the entire youth center in Germany, and the kids would come in every day, because it's a long process to do the whole youth center, and so every day I would say, what do you want? And we would add a frog in or this, and they had this sense of owning it too, you know, so I think you're completely right. It's just a, you know, it's almost a community event then, and everybody's really excited. Great energy. But also, if in your demo, if you're using technology, let's say you have a slideshow or, you know, maybe you've got a slideshow of your process or a slideshow of paintings, whatever it is, if that is the case, you've just added an extra element to your stress, because you really need to have backups or, you know, make sure that the whole thing is working. Because I'm sure all of us have been in situations where technology has failed us. I remember especially in college doing, you know, presentations and things, you wanted to make sure you had it on two or three discs or two or three flash drives, or, you know, you didn't want to have that mess up. So just be aware, if you're going to use technology, that really be prepared in case it's not going to work for you, that you can still go on without it or have a backup way.
And as much as I said you want to be human, and if you hit a rough spot, you want to let the audience know, you want to make sure, however, that you always stay in charge and be confident in who you are and how you paint. Don't, there's that fine line, and just remember that this is your demo. You are the artist that's there. Be confident, be proud, and be excited about what you're doing. So hopefully that makes sense. Okay, so as you're getting ready, really, really basic point, and it is so obvious, but we have to say it, and that is if you're doing a demo, you've got to paint something that you're familiar with. This is not the time to try something entirely new. Don't be avant-garde. It's more important to be comfortable in what you're doing than to try something new. And I always try new things when I teach, but I think that's different. But anytime I'm doing a demo in front of an art group or something, I'll always paint something that I'm really comfortable with. And then I know if I start to stray or if I get some crazy ideas from the audience, I'm still comfortable with that. And, I mean, literally, I could paint boats probably with my eyes closed. I've painted so many, so.
So kind of important.
And if I, but if I have someone who calls me and wants me to paint a specific thing that I'm not comfortable with, sometimes I've actually turned down groups. Because, you know, I've had people say, oh, we want you to come and paint a portrait. And I'm like, I don't paint portraits. And so I have to turn them down because it's just not, I think it's something I would dread and worry about and stress over and be miserable in doing. And it's crazy. So it's okay to say no, but when you are doing something, 99% of the time they're not going to tell you what to paint. Just make sure you paint something that you're very, very comfortable with.
I think a portrait is one of those hard to fake your way through it.
Yeah, you think?
You get one millimeter off on an eye and it looks totally wrong. Mm-hmm. But, and I think that all goes right back to just being confident with yourself. You're going to be a lot more confident if it's something you've done a lot. I think it's kind of like teachers. The first-year teachers are a little greener than the people that have done it, you know, several years and have gone over the same thing over and over and over. So just, mm-hmm. you know, be smart about it and do something you're really familiar with. And also you should paint large enough for that your audience can see, you know, paint a size that's big enough so they can see what you're doing. Now, I get around this by bringing in a larger version of what I'm painting. You know, I've done these old weathered chair paintings. Well, I have a full sheet, which is 40 by 30 of this chair. And so I do a small 6x6 version in a demo because, like I said, I'm trying to do certain things like the crackled paint, the wood, you know, the hydrangeas behind it, kind of, you know, show different techniques. But then you can see a really large version of it. So if you can't, you know, if you are a slow painter like I am and you don't, you know, painting a, you know, huge painting is not going to be possible at a demo, you could always have, you know, do a smaller version of something you've already painted mm-hmm. and have that visual aid with you.
Really important. Another thing you can do, and that is think about, you know, we talked about a larger painting so people can see. If you try to bring things that enable you to do kind of the show and tell thing. For example, I pre-mix all of my colors. So mixing paint and determining colors is a really kind of big, important part of the way I teach and the way I demo. So I bring, if I can, a glass palette so that as I'm mixing my colors, I can pick it up and show everyone what I'm doing. Anytime you can kind of do that show and tell, hey, here's what I'm doing, it makes a huge difference. So just think about that.
Yeah, and I've brought, you know, different, you can bring other things with you also, you know, like if you have a lot of your postcards and your things that you can pass out and show, this kind of your wow factor. I also like to show how I send my art because with watercolors it's a little different, so I might show that technique because I think, you know, the way I present it looks nice in the end, and I always have a certificate of authenticity, so you can have all those things with you to show, you know, just how professional, you know, you are and everything that comes, you know, with a painting of yours.
Mm-hmm.
And you also should make a list of those materials so you have them available. And if you have any handouts, maybe with your color palettes or your types of paint, you know, have all that with you so that they can see it. And that Jane Angelhart exhibit I just went to, she had a printout, and it actually had a little color swatch of each of the colors she used in her
paint. Oh, wow.
Yeah, I thought that was really nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's been very organized. Okay, so because you know me and I'm all about marketing, if you do a demo and you don't bring stuff to pass out, you're in trouble, so you need to bring business cards, a flyer on your workshops, any collateral materials you may have, anything, because this is a great chance for you to sell books, to sell calendars, to sell note cards, whatever it may be, and a great, great chance for people to have a take-home, which is really, really important.
I know, and I like to have things that are no-brainers. You know, nobody really has to think about $25 and under, maybe even $50
right.
and under.
Right.
So if you have note cards or, you know, all those things, those are kind of just, they're going to pick that up because they
mm-hmm.
were there, they want the experience, they want the souvenir kind of thing. You know, you don't have to think too much about that. But you also should bring sample paintings to your show and make sure there's prices on them. I have sold a lot in workshops and demos just by doing that. And
yeah,
the first time was just, the first time was just on accident. I'm like, well, I should, you know, I think somebody even asked, can you bring extra, you know, I didn't even think about it. And then, you know, you sell six paintings later, you're going, oh, that was really smart. So
yeah,
never
exactly.
miss an opportunity because they're watching you paint and then they're going to see it, especially, that's where I've sold a lot of my larger pieces. Those are harder to sell online. So have them
mm-hmm.
at a demo, have them at a workshop because, you know, they are seeing you paint, they're already getting to know you. So, you know, have it there.
You're right. And you also have an audience of people in a lot of cases you've never met, so you want to make sure you get their information. Do some kind of drawing. You do not need to give away your demo painting, obviously, but you can give a print or something along those lines. You know, ask them for their contact information so you can get in touch with them because you never know who may be potential collectors in the audience. Whenever I'm doing an art show, I always do that. And I have these little business cards that I've had pre-printed, free, of course, from Vistaprint. They have my logo on the front side, and on the back it says, please add me to your mailing list. And there's a name, their email, and their address. They fill it out, and at the bottom it says, add me to monthly newsletter with a little checkbox or add me to blog updates with a little checkbox. So then I'm getting their permission just to have them, become a follower permanently. So you need to get prepared. Obviously, for this demo, you need to start practicing. Next time you walk into your studio, literally start talking out loud. Give a demo while you're painting a painting. You know, be able to explain yourself. And once you can do that, it's a huge revelation. And I think if you start doing it now, there's no doubt in my mind that you'll also paint better paintings, which we talked about. So it's a really important thing. Well, let's talk about video demos because you and I have both done those, Carrie. And there's a lot of different topics. You don't have to just do a demo, but for example, a topic for a video may be, of course, just talk about a new piece you're working on. So that's easy. And you can make a video portfolio that you can do without and video, you know, footage, and you can do this with your camera and a video editor to make a slideshow. So you don't necessarily need a video camera. You can just take still photos and turn that into a video.
Right. You can, of course, the obvious, you can do a painting demo. I've been trying to figure out how to film mine because, like I said, it takes me many, many hours. So I set my iPad up the other day and I was trying to film it, and I've had many funny little things happen, you know, like you didn't hit it or you didn't hit record when you thought it was
mm-hmm.
recording, or your thing shifted and you're recording the side of something and not even your painting. So, but, yes, you can always do a painting demo, but it's going to take some trial and error, I will warn you.
It does. The easiest thing to do is to take still photos.
Yes.
Put your camera right there and put something that reminds you, like every, you know, 5 minutes, take one photograph.
Yes.
And it's amazing, or every 10 minutes, depends on how long it takes you to do a painting. But if you do that, then you're going to have a really wonderful record of what you've done. It's a lot harder to start out with video. I suggest you always start out with stills. But another thing you could do is give a snippet of an artist talk you delivered at a gallery. So start thinking about the fact that, gosh, if I start recording what I'm doing wherever I go, then I'm going to have footage that perhaps can be edited and used for future videos.
Right, and you can always introduce yourself, tell your story, how you started painting. You can do your own question and answer video, maybe, you know, people questions that you get all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I have a friend that teaches art for an elementary school, and she asked me if I would answer questions for her kids. So I did, and I did it in video so they could see me, and they were all, like, thrilled. You know, they couldn't believe that I did a video. So, you know, just the little things like that. But But you can do all of those. And you could also, you know, if you've just done a series of paintings and they've come, you know, there's a story about that, you could always do that and attach that video. I believe on my website, Fine Art Studio Online is where I have my website. I think you can put a video on there. I know on the Daily Paint Works auction, you know, the Daily Paint Works site, you can attach a video to each painting if you want to have a little paint, you know, even if you just do a, you know, talk about the painting you just did and have it on there. It's kind of, it's quicker really to do a video of that than it is to type, you know, type it all up.
Mm-hmm. No, that definitely makes sense. Okay, so getting ready to video your demo, and I think you did a lot of this research, Karen, a lot of it came from Lori McNee's blog, right?
Yes, mm-hmm. She has some great info. She started and she said that lighting is one of the most important things about your video. I think we're all used to that if we're photographing our art. Lighting is imperative or you don't get a good image. Same thing is going to happen with your video, so you need to be aware of that. And before you stand there and talk for 30 minutes on a video or 10 minutes, however long, do a test sample and see, you know, look at it and see how it's looking. You don't want any harsh shadows on you or your art. So just make sure that it's simply lit and that that it looks good on camera, because you don't want it to be all washed out, you know, especially your painting. You don't want to be doing a demo and nobody can see it. I mean, I've had that happen with drawings, you know, like you can't see it. So you may have to adjust. And I think, though, I have some lamps that are like the natural light lamps.
Mm-hmm.
And they do a pretty good job with my iPad for lighting things. So it doesn't have to be like expensive lighting.
And do you have the holder where you can put your iPad on a tripod? And
no,
video?
I'm going to be getting that because
you know what? Just go on to
like a box.
If you go on to Amazon, you can get that, the little tripod. It's a thing that fits into the top of your tripod, and then it holds your iPad or your iPhone, and it's so wonderful. I went so far as to, with my camera, I got my video camera, I bought a remote control button. However, the problem with that is you can't really tell when it's on and when it's not.
Right.
So if you press the remote control too many times, you may do a great video and never record it, so...
I've done that a few times without the remote control.
One of the things you should do is do some research before you start. And the way you want to do that is watch other artists' videos, because you're going to see things that you like and things that you don't like. And it's a great way to learn, okay, I think this is how I'm going to do my video because I saw one that somebody did and it looked really good. So it's kind of important to figure out those tips and decide the format. Perhaps whether it may convince you that you don't actually need to use video footage and you can use still photos and get almost the same effect, at least when you're first starting out.
Right. And right. Why reinvent the wheel if you can watch other
mm-hmm.
videos? Okay. Don't like that at all. I do like, you know, at least, you know, you have a place to start from. And you can watch YouTube. YouTube has a lot of interviews of famous artists and lesser known artists about their work, and, you know, search your favorite artists and see what they have. I think I heard there's like a Monet, you can watch Monet painting right now too, and there's a YouTube video of that. But you can watch how they set up their videos, how, you know, take notes, do like quick sketches of what you liked and didn't like, so that you can just take that away. And you might also, you know, like doing that, say, oh, you know, maybe they did a video on something you wouldn't have thought of doing, a new topic or, you know, different things like that. So you can get all kinds of inspiration just from seeing what everyone else has done.
Mm-hmm. That's a great idea. The other thing is don't be too serious. Don't forget to have fun and play. It's very tempting to want to be perfect on the first take, especially if you're filming video versus stills. So you kind of have to let go of it happening, because it's probably not going to happen anyway. So you got to give yourself time to get comfortable in front of the camera. I don't think any of my videos have me in front of the camera. None of them do. I just am not that comfortable. I'd much rather have you watch me painting or have me talking, but... you know, you just have to figure out what you're most comfortable with and just do it. Don't spend too much time worrying about it or planning it. I say just go for it.
Right, and you make sure the angle is good. I mean, especially the iPad, it's hard sometimes to get the angle of it.
Mm-hmm.
So just pay attention to that kind of thing. My mom always tells me, I always do good driver's license pictures and things like that. And my dad was a photographer, so I'm always really paying attention to the angle and the way lighting is and everything. Because I don't, you know, you don't want your art or yourself looking bad on there.
Mm-hmm.
So just play around and see what works. You might have to have somebody stand in for you, get your kid.
Yeah.
You know, see how that's what they do on their shows and things, and see how your lighting is and, you know, how it's looking, you know, with somebody else in there while you're behind the camera. But
very true.
You also, you want to make sure you have a video title that's going to stand out. I think a lot of us are used to this with our blogs and, you know, having to come up with blog titles, and especially like your show. You want to get like a riveting title for your video. Use
mm-hmm.
tags that people might be searching for, you know, how to or, you know, oil techniques, watercolor techniques, how to do those. You need to have your style, your name, and as many keywords as you can. So if you're, you know, typing in a search, that you want to make sure you're getting people to come to your video.
Mm-hmm. The other thing is less is more. Keep your video 5 minutes or less. YouTube does a good job of that. Your video can't be too long or it won't save it. But I think they do that on purpose, because research has found that people's attention span begins to wander after only 8 seconds. So don't make it too long. And very, very important. See, then it's easier to put it together if it's shorter, too.
Right. And you also make sure you brand yourself in your video. You need to have, you know, mention your name, and maybe your logos in the background, something. Just make sure people know who you are. Maybe I think you can even do, like, the little caption at the bottom, the subtitle at the bottom. Maybe have your website on there. But that way people know where to go, where to find you, and who you are.
Mm-hmm. And if you're going to use YouTube, which is a great, great option, create your own YouTube channel. I did that. And basically what it does is it lets you kind of create your little mini website or web page on YouTube, and you can brand it. So mine has my logo on it. It's got the color scheme of sage green. I know you're shocked. And then it has all my videos on it. So it just looks like kind of a nice little page. And then I can use that web page as a link from my blog, from my website, which I've done. So it kind of gives me a great place to kind of post all of my videos. And it's important to do, especially if you're like me and you have other videos of your children doing their sports. And you want to be able to keep those away separately. By creating your own YouTube channel, as it's called, you can have just a place for your art videos. There are a lot of programs out there for creating videos. In the WebinArts class I taught in September, which I might let everyone know I'm doing another beginning class in January, but I did a whole couple of days on creating videos. And there's a lot of different programs that you can use. YouTube actually has editing capabilities, and so you can edit, add music from a list of free sources. You can add subtitles and captions, and it is a great resource to be able to do some editing. Important to know.
Right. I have used Animoto, which is really easy. It's very professional looking, but the only drawback I found, well, there's a couple drawbacks I found to it, but the to get it where it doesn't have their branding on it, you have to pay for the full package. And it's
right.
not super cheap, or I would have done it. I can't remember.
And there's also a limit on the length of the video, too. If you don't pay, I think it's 30 seconds or something.
Right. There's a mid-grade package that I bought, and I can't remember right now. You know, it seems like it was around 35 or something for that one. And I think for the big package, it's like 150. I just can't remember right now exactly, so don't quote me on the prices. But so they'll have their branding on any of the videos. The other thing I didn't like about it, and like I said, I don't have the full package, is that when you don't have any control over how long your image is on the screen that I could find, because they have it's a very easy template-driven program, so you're just dropping in photos, and they have these really gorgeous videos that you're putting them into, and they have a really nice list of music. That's one of the things. You can't just use any music for your video.
Right.
You need to use the ones that are, you know, that are free, that you're not going to have to pay royalties on. So they have a nice, you know, lot. They have a lot of music on there also. And if you go on my blog, which is Carrie Waller, CarrieWaller at blogspot.com, I've got two videos I've done through Animoto, so you can see what they look like. But they do look fantastic. But like I said, you can't control Like my, I did one on kind of the process of my painting, so I had the how-to pictures, and I would rather they'd been up a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little short, but if you're sticking with the, you know, you only have an attention span of 8 seconds, so maybe that's okay. I don't know, but so that was my only, you know, downside to that. But they do look great, and you know, it's a very professional looking if you want to just have a plug and play kind of program.
Right, Vimeo is another company very similar to YouTube that you can use, and I believe they also have an iPhone app. If you are a Mac person, then iMovie, hands down, is the best program you can use to create videos. It's what I use to create almost all my videos. I'm doing an advanced class in March for webinars, and I will be spending a lot of time showing people how to do it in iMovie. iMovie is one of those programs that once you figure it out, man, it's so addicting. And what's so great about it is you can do absolutely everything. You can edit, you can take video, and you can clip just certain parts of it. You can turn down the voice and add music over it. You can add any music that you want. You can throw stills in conjunction with video. They have these little preset trailers that I did a little trailer for The Carriage House that was kind of a James Bondy kind of theme that I had put up on my, and I got tons and tons of hits. And basically it was a little prepackaged thing. All I had to do was drag in a little bit of video and some stills, and the music was already there, and I could change the copy, and it was looked like this really nice professional video that took me about an hour to create. So iMovie is a fantastic program. And if you are a Apple person, sign up for one of the free iMovie classes at the Apple Store, and they'll teach you how to do it, which is fantastic. And I absolutely love it. So it's a little more advanced, certainly, but a great program.
But can I interject? I think I don't have a desktop or laptop that's Mac, but I have an iPad, and you mm-hmm. can. There is an app, an mm-hmm. iMovie app. So I haven't
there
done
is.
That yet, but I'm going to be exploring that very soon.
Good point, because there's an iMovie and an iPhoto app that I have that I have both of those on my my iPad. So very, very good point. So there are also screencasts, and I know we're kind of running out of time, and I am teaching. So I'm going to, if I can, just condense this. Mm-hmm. There are ways to capture what you're doing on your screen. And for anyone who took the webinars class, boy, oh boy, you saw many of those videos, because that's how I was able to show how to create a website, how to, you know, do all the little things and the secrets that I talked about in webinars. But we've got a couple of options here. The first one is called Screener. It's S-C-R-E-E-N-R, and it's just a great program, so you can look that up if you're interested.
And they have Overstream is another basic one. You can pull videos. It's supported like YouTube or Google Video, and you can add subtitles to it.
Mm-hmm. And then Jing, I guess, is another one, Carrie, that you found that puts a sun-shaped icon, say that three times, in the upper right-hand corner of your monitor. And when you want to grab a screenshot or a screencast, just hit the icon, and it opens a tool that allows you to mark what you want to do and start recording, which is great.
And then I'll just... a lot of us want to know how to do, like, the time-lapse videos. So I'll do a quick but the time-lapse, I just wanted to make sure everybody knew what that was. It's when everything is sped up really fast, you know, when you see, like, the sun setting all the way to, you know, the sun rising all the way to sun setting in, like, a two-minute video. Those are the time-lapse movies. And a lot of people want to know how to do that, especially when they're painting, especially for me, who takes a long time to paint. You want to have it sped up because you don't want to have people sitting there for hours and hours and hours watching you paint.
Really?
Yeah. Maybe some people might want to. I don't know. But, you know, eight seconds of time of your people of attention. So anyway, they so that is what time lapse is, and a lot of us want to know how to do that. So I'll let you go on to the next.
Well, the other thing I was going to say in iMovie, you can just click on a whole, your whole movie, and you can change the speed of it, and you can speed it up from 0 to like 20. So if you just want to speed up the speed of parts of it or all of it, it's really easy to do, which is wonderful. There's also a time or iTime lapse app, and from what I understand, you can set up your iPad, iPhone, et cetera, on a tripod, and see how often you want a picture to be taken and then how fast you want to speed it up, and it creates a time-lapse segment. That's something I'm definitely going to look into, because if I can just do it and it's automatically going to record and I don't have to think about it, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, I think from what I understand, it just shoots a picture however often, you know, if you set it up over your space or your painting, I think you set it up to take a picture at certain intervals, and then you can decide how quickly you want it sped up. So it's doing it from photos, but there's probably a way to do it from the video too, or maybe you're using iMovie for that. I don't know.
If you had that set up automatically and it took a picture every 5 minutes or whatever,
right?
I mean, that would be fantastic. And if the app only costs $2.99,
right?
That would be amazing, really amazing.
I know, so I'm definitely checking into that. And then I have a couple links. I don't know if we can put this on the site. I'll put it on my blog for sure.
Absolutely.
There's two links. If you want to do this with your digital camera instead of, you know, if you don't have an iPhone or an iPad, I have two links for a digital camera, and it just teaches you how to, you know, set it up on your camera and how to do it, you know, with the digital camera.
Wonderful. Yeah, I'll put those on the AHA blog for sure for today's show. But, Carrie, I have to thank you. Gosh, what an amazing month it's been, and you are a very hardworking co-host. You've done an amazing amount of research and helped me out times when I was traveling and everything, and I just want to thank you and make sure that everyone goes and looks at Carrie Waller's art. If you're not following her on Facebook or her blog, you've got to see the 6x6 painting she just completed of the Pellegrino bottles. It is completely insane. I thought that was like a 40x40. When I saw, and I should have realized, because you had the brush holder right in front of it, so of course that put it in perspective, but oh my goodness, you are such a gifted artist, and I am so excited, and you're going to be back on the show, whether you want to be or not.
I would love to. I had a blast, and I love to research, so you've got the right person for that.
Oh, you know it. And I owe you one show since we missed last week, so you're going to be back hopefully on a Tuesday or Thursday.
when my smallest friend's in school.
I know, which would be fantastic. So that would
I
be great.
I had a blast, and thank you for this opportunity, and I just loved it. So I really appreciate doing it. I appreciate everything you do in this show, and I think so many of us would be lost without it. So anything I can do to help with the show, I'm more than happy to do.
Thank you, Carrie. And, of course, next week, Sherry McGraw is going to be on, which I'm really excited and happy that she was able to reschedule. So take care, everybody. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you next week. Thanks, Carrie.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.